Welcome to Live Talks, a podcast by Live, a tech and logistics company headquartered in Abu Dhabi. On Live Talks, we tackle fintech, logistics, business, and best practices in the workplace. I'm Karim Bakhash, the VP of Strategy at Live Global, and I will be your host. Welcome to a new episode of Live Talks. Today's topic is going to be decoding retail success. My guest today is Ayman Baydoun, the Deputy CEO and Group CEO of Brand for Less Group. Actually, Brand for Less has other mini concepts like Homes for Less and Toys for Less. Ayman, if you want to introduce yourself first.
Sure, thank you. So I'm Ayman Baydoun, Deputy CEO and Group CEO of Brands for Less Group. I've been with the group for the past 6 years and been part of a great growth journey. Today, for those who do not know what Brands for Less is, we're an off-price retailer of fashion, toys, homes, accessories, and a lot of other categories spread across 6 different countries in the GCC. Hopefully by the end of 2024, spread across 8 countries beyond the GCC as we aim to go global. So that's what we do. We spread across more than 104 stores in the region and hopefully 130 by the end of 2024.
Great. Well, great to have you. Today, what we wanted to discuss is, you know, how to be successful as a retailer. Retailer in the past decade or more have been facing a lot of pressure. It's been one of the most disrupted sector when you think about e-commerce, new players, and how traditional retailer had to adapt with all the changes that came, and how current retailers still need to continuously adapt and follow consumer behaviorism and the change of consumer habits. So I think today what we wanted to do is, you know, start to understand, you know, what are the key components that you think about when you think about retail success, and then we'll deep dive into some of them and understand a bit of the challenges. And we'll finish, you know, about technologies and the new trends that we see in the market. So let's maybe start at the beginning, right? What do you think are the key components when you start talking about retail success?
So I think the only word you spelled twice is consumer. So I'll say consumer. That's the most important thing in retail. So and that's what we do. I mean, we evolve around the consumer himself or herself. Today, in everything we do, we look at what the consumer wants, how the consumer wants to buy, what the consumer wants to buy, and when would the consumer want to buy, and which channel. Which channel meaning whether it's offline or online. And we create that omnichannel experience, which I'm sure everyone now knows what omnichannel is, since it used to be the world of the globe in 2021. Today it's AI, but but again, everything we do is evolving around the customer or the consumer himself or herself.
So you brought up something interesting about kind of reaching out to customer. Lately, I mean, not lately, but it's been a while where we receive more and more messages about ads on your phone and different places. Now, it seems to be a lot of hit and miss, to be honest, right? Because it might have been that you gave your phone number while you're shopping somewhere because they wanted to send you some coupon. Yeah. And then you start receiving different things that seems to be irrelevant a lot of the time. How do you decide what is the right trigger, right? Because I'm receiving these messages, to be honest, I'm just deleting them, right? Because I mean, like, okay, just enough of these. Maybe someone else is very interested and they look at it. Some other people are very triggered through Instagram or TikTok. Yeah. I'm not on both, to be honest, for some reason. But, and then some of people aren't doing WhatsApp marketing now. So it's like all spreading between WhatsApp. So how do you know which triggers and which one to use everywhere, right? Because there's so many options.
Absolutely. So I think the main component here is data. So again, I always like to bring up examples because I think that's the learning part of it. So today we know which customer is buying or looking for a t-shirt that's white in color, small in size, online. That customer passes, does not find what he wants or what she wants online, exits the cart and does not shop. So the next time he visits a Brands for Less store, again, in Brands for Less as an example, we know that he searched for a white t-shirt, which is small in size, but he didn't buy it. So the moment he or she passes through that section, we send a personalized message through the app, through the mobile app.
That's a bit scary. I don't know if I want you to know that I was looking for specific things. Maybe it was not
for
me.
But again, it's you're logged in on the app. It's your user ID.
Okay.
I mean, that's how we target customers. Now, that's something that we tested recently in two of the stores and proved to be successful.
So what you're saying is it's not only about sending me that message later on at a random time saying, hey, you looked at that, because that's called the falling cards, meaning like this a card that failed.
Yes.
And then you try to send, a lot of them what they do, they send a coupon after it saying, hey, you didn't buy this 10%, please come back. I'll give you 10%. Now you're saying, no, he looked for it. He didn't find it. He's walking in the shop, somehow location-based you found him in the shop, and then you just send him a message saying, hey, you're in the shop, by the way, this is now available.
Yeah, so I'm giving the customer a chance to find what he wants, and I'm giving the store a chance to upsell the customer as well.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So exactly.
This is how personalized it became.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that removes a bit the randomness of messages.
Yeah.
What other triggers do you guys look at sometimes?
So, of course, social media as well. So we look at viewers, we look at people who interact, even people who, because again, in retail, you've got satisfied customers, dissatisfied customers. We look at those metrics as well. Target dissatisfied customers, coupons, etc., whether online or offline, and then make sure that we interact with that customer and make sure that, again, we get to what the customer expects, whether it's a service or it's a product.
Good. Okay. So now we are talking about this kind of journey or seamless experience, if you want, of a customer, consumer. What do you think, if you think about the perfect one, what is the steps or strategies of getting a perfect, seamless journey of a consumer?
Yeah. So I think traditionally retail was all about product, price. Today, retail is all about product, price, shopper's experience, and tech.
Okay.
And in today's retail world, tech is in each and every element of those product, price, and shopping behavior or experience. So we have tech in shopping experience, we have tech in pricing, and we have tech in selecting the right product. And that's what we ensure we built in our systems. And I think we'll touch upon AI in our discussion. But everything we do is based on AI, based on automation, based on technology. So from the moment we decide which product should be in stores to which product should be online, and which store, at which point in time tech is involved.
Okay.
Now, why do we specify when and where do we want to send the product? It's all because of the consumer, because that consumer asked for it at one point in time. So we look at data again. So for us, data is king, not cash. So we rely on data, or we make sure that tech is involved in choosing the product and then making sure the price is attractable by the customer by looking at the history of that particular product, subcategory, category, and all the technicalities of planning. And then shopping experience. I mean, today you go to any Brandsville store, you can find your, if you don't find your product, you can scan any QR code in the store, and then it directs you to the same product category and subcategory to try and find similar item. You can take a photo of that item you liked on the mobile app and find similar items online, or maybe the same item online. At the same time, click and collect in stores. So all those come into play when it comes to making sure that the shopping experience is seamless to the customer. At the end of the day, the consumer wants to buy something that fits him or her, that matches his price expectations, whether it's low, mid, or high, and then making sure that it's easy to shop and get it delivered, whether in store or to his doorsteps.
Let's look at this maybe in a comparative way. What do you think differentiates, what is the one or two things that differentiate a successful retailer from a non-successful retailer? And that retailer could be a pure e-commerce player or a normal retailer. Why I'm asking this question is, what we're talking about is all, you know, it's good to talk about, you know, consumer, understanding your consumer, you do the right thing. Everybody thinks about that, but a lot of people don't understand exactly what is a success and a failure on doing this, because you can do it, but you can do it badly.
Yeah.
So what comes to mind if you think about successful and failure?
So you said it right. You can do it just because everyone else is doing it, but then that doesn't mean you've done it the right way. Now, I think the first and most important thing, and I always say that to the teams and say, listen, guys, you have to acknowledge your mistakes. If we don't acknowledge our mistakes, then we will never be able to correct those mistakes. We'll never be able to make sure that we implement the right things. Now, implementing something might work, might not work. Now, the worst thing about it is not correcting that mistake and just not acknowledging that mistake from the beginning, because that's a failing approach to how retailers, and I think a lot of retailers have, without naming some, I mean, a lot of retailers have failed in doing things that others have succeeded because they haven't acknowledged the mistakes within that journey of implementing new things. And because the retail is evolving, I mean, every single week we've got something new to implement. If you implement without acknowledging the mistakes you faced during that implementation, then it's a failure formula. Right. But I think the success formula in acknowledging mistakes, making sure that you correct those mistakes as quickly as possible, and ensuring that you have the team on board and in the same boat to achieve that success. That's one of the very main points, because believe it or not, I think people are what companies are built around. So people build companies and companies do not build people. So if those people really believe that they've done something wrong, it's good to go and say, listen, we've done something wrong, let's correct it, let's implement it in a different way and make sure we achieve what we wanted to achieve.
Sounds like a startup attitude, what you're talking about, like companies that try to be always changing, even if they do a mistake, they just pivot completely and continuously try to find something else to do and succeed in it. So that's good. But then, so we've been talking about kind of like the consumer, we're talking about having the right product, the price, the customer journey. So we mentioned the data.
Yeah.
All the data that comes within this journey. How do you manage all this? Because there's quite a lot of data and you need to process the data and know how to take an action based on the data. So can you talk more about kind of the analytics that goes into retail?
Absolutely. So I'll maybe speak, because it's I think it's split into two parts or two main parts, supply chain and the retail front end, I'd say. So the back end is obviously operations and supply chain. I think we touched upon technology and pricing and planning. Now, and we believe in everything we do, we should think about scale. I think 2 years ago or 3 years ago, we were at 40 stores. Today, we're at 104 stores. If we hadn't implemented the right technology and used data, leveraged data in a proper and right way, by using AI and automation, we wouldn't have been able to scale. And again, that scale is more than 300% in 3 years. Having said that, that means today we sit on a huge data, which we leverage through AI. I'm just going to give you some examples of some things that we've implemented and other retailers have started or already implemented from the supply chain part now. So the back end. Today, we run our systems on robotics. We use robotics to distribute items to each store. We don't pre-allocate. I think the traditional way in retail or traditional way of allocating products to stores in retail is pre-allocation based on a selection you do in fall, winter season, allocate across stores or across different locations.
Yes.
Today, we receive the product. Once we scan that product, the system knows which store has the most probability to sell that product based on data of who visits the store, history of that category, subcategory, or division and subclass, as others call it. So we rely on data, we rely on AI, and then once the system allocates that product, and that's a live allocation, which happens directly after scanning that product, because of, again, leveraging on data, the robot goes in and sorts that item to the store. And then you've got the other part of the back end where products sit in the warehouse. You have shuttle systems, getting those totes or those baskets of clothing. Again, everything is automated. So there's no human intervention in this because you're relying on robots, AI, and data. That's on the back end side. Now, a lot of people only see the front end of things. But then how do you ensure you send the right product and to the right place and in the right time? It's through data. You cannot do it manually. You cannot rely on an army of 100 people planning and looking in stores. You can't do that. Yeah. When we're talking about scale, obviously you'll need people to supervise systems to make sure that systems work to the best interest of the customer first and then the organization. And that's where we have our leaders in the group when it comes to systems and data. Now, on the front end, which is the stores, as I said, it's personalization. It's ensuring we give that seamless experience and relying on data to ensure that the customer finds what they want in the store, get the right customer service. Again, customer service today treats the customer in a completely different way the way they used to do 5 years ago. Today, they understand the whole journey of the customer, whatever they've done online, offline, when did they transact, when they did not, why did they transact and why did they not, and then act accordingly and then address the customer accordingly.
You mentioned supply chain, and one of the points you talked about is sorting. Let me take one step even before. How does it work then for demand forecasting and what you want to order? Because this is where the more tricky part is, right? Because once you get it, you already got it, you have to sell it, you're going to allocate to where you think it's going to sell. But just before that, you have to order what you're going to sell. And a lot of retailers, especially in clothes and apparel, fail in this because it's about trends, it's about consumers, what works now, doesn't work in 6 months, but then you need to order before. So they get into this testing ground sometimes that they don't know what to do. And I'll talk about what some retailers are doing now, but let's think about how do you then use tech and data to order?
So we've got a history of our customers' behavior, at least for the past 5 or 6 years now.
Right.
We have the history of the stores, what sells, what doesn't. We go from a division, I'm just going to take an example just to simplify it, of, let's assume men as a division, down to men clothing, down to men polo shirts, down to men blue shirts, down to size small, medium, large, XL, and others. And we look at demand planning in silos when it comes to different countries, but then consolidate at a group level. So what works in UAE doesn't work in Saudi, for example.
No, of course.
An extra small in size in Saudi is not going to work. In UAE, it flies off the shelves. And a double XL size works in Saudi, might not work in UAE. A blue shirt might work in UAE, might not work in Saudi. So a lot of data here. And again, we look at men, we look at clothing, we look down to size, and then look at quantities we've sold in the past, the brands, best performing brands. And because we're in the multi-brand business and a discounter business, we make sure that the ASPs or the average selling prices make sense to the customer at the end of the day.
Right.
Again, looking at historical trends, down to size, down to subcategory as polos, t-shirts, or whatever it is. And then based on that, get all those different countries, silos, that work in silos, consolidate them on a group level, and then forecast on a 5 months or 6 months trend. But that doesn't mean we stop the demand forecasting or demand planning. Our OTBs, our open to buys, are dynamic, fully automated within our systems. That means the OTB changes every single day based on the sales of all the stores in all countries. So today I might come in saying we need 5,000 men t-shirts in blue color in size S. Tomorrow I come in says you need 4,700 based on yesterday's sale.
Right.
And then that gets updated on a weekly basis, sent to buyers, sent to category managers, buying directors, buying offices. And again, around the globe. So we've got buying offices in the US, in Europe, in Asia. And then we send those information and make sure they buy the right product.
Right. There's some retailers, especially online, that have been trying some new concept on making it completely on demand, where they consolidate orders and then they tell you you'll only get it after a week or two, and then they produce it, which makes it more like a just in time. What's your thoughts about this kind of logic?
I think in today's world, that's the most efficient way in doing things, to be very honest.
Yeah.
We don't do it this way because it's a completely different business.
Correct.
We rely on people forecasting the wrong way.
Yeah.
Because that's...
again, you don't know what's going to be fashionable in a few months,
true.
Right?
Exactly.
It's very difficult.
So we're in the business of overstock, of people forecasting the wrong way, just making sure we create another life for that product itself. So that falls into the ESG part of it as well.
So do you think there's a potential for retail? I mean, it's very difficult for offline to be like this, but in the online, do you think there's a potential for online to become more and more just in time?
I think this only works for online. That cannot work for offline,
Of course.
And I think they have tried to do something offline, but couldn't. I couldn't succeed in doing that. But at the same time, the customer doesn't only want to buy online.
Yeah.
They want to buy online and offline.
Correct.
So you're losing on the customer's journey, whether the customer will buy another time or would buy at a competitor's store. So you're losing that, again, opportunity and customer's lifetime value.
Let me pick on this point, because this is an interesting point. A few years ago, when I was still in my consulting years, a lot of... people were talking about the death of retail, of offline retail. I'm not sure if you remember, it was like 2017, 2018. A lot of retailers were closing in the US. It was kind of like a big thing, right? But then lately, it seems like there's a bit of a regain of offline, like smaller shops, people like to go shop. What's your thought? Is this kind of like a counter trend, or is it just kind of a counter reaction of people, or... what's the latest on this?
We call it's the retail revenge or offline retail revenge.
Okay.
I think in today's world, as I said, the customer doesn't only want to buy online. They want to feel the product. They want to have the right experience in stores. At the end of the day, no one wants to sit and, again, couch potato and then just sit on their couch, order online. That's they might want to do it on a Sunday. They might want to do it on a Friday, whatever it is, but they don't want to do it every single day. They want to go to the stores, see something else, feel the product, have an experience, and then that's the beauty of life, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't have been going around, going to stores, going to restaurants. We would have only ordered online, eaten pasta in our houses, right? But that's not how things are. I think today, retailers are focusing on the customer's journey and experience rather than on the product itself.
Right.
And that's a very important factor in determining whether the company can be successful or not.
Right. Okay, let's now looking more at the future. We touched about AI multiple times. Maybe we can start with this. I have some other ones that I want to discuss, but let's talk about the latest trend, right? Everybody's talking about AI, and you mentioned also how much you're using it. Maybe if you want to talk about, again, kind of, what exactly are you doing in AI? So kind of the people can understand a bit more, what is the latest trend?
Sure. So I think today or 1 year ago, every single retailer thought about augmented reality, thought about what can we do in the other space. And a lot of retailers started doing that. I'm not going to quote names because we carry more than 3,000 brands.
Yeah, so, of course.
I don't want to advertise any brands here. A lot of local retail groups as well in the GCC region started that journey. It's something that you have to tap to, but that's something that we as Brands for Less Group believe that we don't need to rush into. We just don't want to be there just to be there. We've started something, again, that's not quite public because we wanted to try, fail, learn, and then achieve. We're in the learning process today. It's something that's quite impressive, that fits or works within the ecosystem of a customer's journey within a BFL. store or channel of stores, whether online, offline, or metaverse. I'm not today in a position to state what we're doing.
No, but I can imagine a bit, because when you mentioned metaverse, and I'm familiar with it, a lot of the things that retailers have been working on, and you don't need to affirm or disaffirm what I'm saying, is creating your own avatar and trying to clothe on the avatar and giving it the option of buying it when you look at it. That's at the end why you go to a store, is because you want to, other than feeling it, which is very important in my opinion, but some people want to see it, how they look into it. Until now, when you shop online, you see it on, you know, fit people for exactly the, I'm not saying fit in the main, the person is fit, but the clothes is exactly fit for the person that you're looking at. So it's very difficult for you to understand, how does it look at me? That's why there was a lot of attempt in the last few years into metaverse,
smart mirrors.
Yeah, look at it. Or, you know, you can put your binoculars on and you can see yourself. So then if you know, you can go and buy. So there was some attempts, but I felt that it was like a bubble and it kind of burst, and then it just went into in the background now. Yeah. And I think where retailers are now trying to do is test on it and see, does it actually this work? See how, you know, consumers will behave, and maybe if it works, then they'll just introduce it in their channels. I am taking all assumptions coming from my consulting years, but I'm assuming that this is a logical direction of where things are, which is good, because then it will bring up people back to what metaverse was meant to be, which is kind of having an experience that is a bit in between. Okay.
So as that's long as it makes the customer's life easier,
of course,
then
of course,
absolutely something that we have to tackle.
Tell you a small story. It's related to this. 15 years ago, I think, or 10 years ago, the early years of internet and like all apps, iPhone apps that came out and all that, iOS. My cousin had a very interesting idea at that time. He's like, you know what we should start? We should start an app that goes and scans all your clothes that you have in your closet with your own avatar, so at least you know what you have. And when you go to a store, you take a picture of it and you can match it to what you have in your closet. Instantly, you know what to buy, and I'm sitting at home. I look at them, I'm like, good idea, but the technology is not there. See you in 10 years. And not long ago, he's like, you see, I told you, this should have happened, but 10 years ago. But the technology was nowhere there. There was, you know, you can't create an avatar at that time. It was very difficult to scan. He looked into it. He's like, how do I scan all these clothes? I have like hundreds. Yeah. It's impossible. You can't, you know, like barcodes were not enough, because barcode is just price. Yeah. But now moving into QR codes, all this information will be now available in the QR code. So then you scan your QR code, you get all the information.
Exactly.
So thoughts about, but sometimes you think about ideas, but you're like way ahead of technology.
But
so.
Then you get surprised with how things are evolving, technology, how retailers are evolving, how logistics is evolving, and all the other parts of it, because of data, AI, and leveraging on that.
Okay. Other than these, you know, AI, we talked about inventory, which is very important in AI. What's your thought about social commerce? Because there's a lot of trends now around chatbots, voice ordering. I don't know. They talk about so many things differently. Is this something that you see as a future, or?
We started implementing something like that. And I think a lot of retailers have also implemented, tested, some succeeded, I'd say, by making sure that there's a human factor in it. I think today, in today's world, the customer is really looking at a very personalized experience. And I'm just going to give you a simple example without naming the entity in here. But there's a bank in UAE, which I guess everyone knows now. They started with that chatbot or voice.
I know which one, but I won't say. Yes, I know.
Yeah, three letters.
Yeah.
So they started with it, and it was a complete failure. At the end of the day, customers got irritated, complaints. You can see the reviews on the App Store.
Yeah.
It was absolutely insane to try and get what you really wanted
because it blocks you.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it will just keep on asking questions. You're like, okay, just enough. zero.
Exactly. Yes. And then they learned, and that was a complete overhaul, I'd say. So they've revamped the whole experience, I'd say. Today, it's much more personalized because of that, the human touch as well. So they've learned, they've succeeded now.
Right.
Today, it's very efficient. you get what you want. You get the answers at least. If you don't get what you want, you can at least get transferred to, exactly, to that human factor, which you, exactly, which you really need. So I think these are quite important, because if you have simple questions that you just need direct answers to, you get them. If it's a bit more complicated or personalized, then you add that human touch into it. So I think it should be a hybrid model. I don't see this technology as a technology that replaces that human being who interacts with that customer.
I think I share the same thing. And, yeah, you know, we do a lot of retail tech at Live, and we see it as just an option, an additional option of other channels, but not something that will replace, yeah, anything else. Yeah. Because it's not, you said there's the human touch. Even though now with all these like voice that responds and can feel like a human, but still not the same. Still not there. Maybe soon, but still not there. Okay, maybe as a closing, is there anything in general that you'd recommend for retailers or small retailers that want to succeed? You said tech is, it feels like from the discussion that seems that tech is really at the center of everything that you do. Is that what you recommend in general?
Absolutely. Now, I think the best way to look at things is look at what the consumer wants. Be that niche to the consumer rather than just any other product at any other place. That's very important. And then include or make sure that tech is involved in every single process that you draw or you plan. Because as you rightly said, retail is evolving. Every single week, you've got a new technology, you've got a new idea that you can implement through technology or through automation. So you have to really grasp that idea, try it out, and then make sure that you transform your business using that tech. Or if not, start a business that involves tech, a niche, again, a niche idea, something that doesn't exist or doesn't have a similar business or product, at least in this part of the world, the same way we've done it in Brands for Less. That would be my advice.
Great. Well, listen, thank you for being our guest today. It was very helpful. I hope this was helpful for everyone. Until the next time, see you next time on Live Talks.